Wednesday, January 10th, 2018 edition of the American Awakening. I'm your host, Michael Herzog, and as always, I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. Now, in a couple of minutes, I have got Clint Richardson coming up, as I had promised earlier in the week. I'm going to have him up for the entire 2 hours, and that's part of the reason why I put that lead-in music is, does that make me crazy? And I'll tell you why. Because I listened to Clint on John's show last Friday, listened to a rebroadcast of it, and frankly, with what he was saying, I was scratching my head going a little bit crazy, so I thought I'd bring him up today, give him the entire 2 hours, and let him walk us through this, because two things about what he had said on John's show last week really stuck in my mind. In my thorough investigation many, many years ago, back in 1995, of the Internal Revenue Service Code, I read that book twice, and like John says, it's worse than watching paint dry. It's like listening to paint dry. But at any rate, there's the terms in that code, and it's interesting, they call it code and not a law. There's a reason for that. In the code, they have specific definitions. For the purpose of this chapter, the definition of blah, blah, blah is this or that, and they change it. And some of what Clint says in his book, in order to really grasp that book, you have to literally understand the definitions of the book before you can even get into the scope of it. Now, before I go there, somebody's ringing a bell. Anyway, before I go there, two things. I want to give a shout out to Marty in Idaho because, yes, indeed, I did go in last night. I watched The Greatest Story Never Told. And, folks, if you haven't seen it, you need to watch it. I'm actually going to break it down because it's not quite in chronological order, but it gives us a completely different perspective of Adolf Hitler and why he did what he did, the position that Germany was in at the time that he came into power and who he was before he came into power. Just a lot of things that I'm going to actually try to go through this weekend and reformat and put it into my own words for you. But you should go in and watch it anyway, The Greatest Story Never Told. And I also want to give a shout out to Carol Asher on that 5-minute video that she sent me on Jerry Spence and the police state. It was fascinating, and it sounds like a book that might be a read. So with that said, with no further ado, let us go to Clint Richardson. Clint, how are you today?
I'm great, man. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. The two things that that caught me when it caught my attention when you were on John's show last week was the Bible is the law, okay? And the second thing is the terms that are used to confuse us. We think it means one thing. They think it, they define it to mean something else. And it caught my attention because, for example, if you go into court, the first thing they ask you in court is, you know, are you the person that is listed in this complaint? And as soon as you say, yeah, you're screwed, because that is a corporate fiction. And the term person in their mind, from what I understand, is a corporation. Am I right in that?
It is the incorporation of a man into a body politic, yes. It's not fair to say that a person necessarily is a corporation, because a natural person is an individual, as they define it. And that just simply means that it's kind of like a corporation soul, if you will. You're just a single entity. Our official person is a corporation, association, all the different, you know, things they define it as, which means that it's many natural persons that come together as one person or are one artificial person. And the reason you do that is for protection, because then, you know, the guys from Enron can say, well, I didn't do anything, the corporation did. Mm-hmm. I'm limited in my liability as a natural person because I have this artificial person that I'm operating under.
I see. Okay, so what I had suggested today, as we spoke the other day, which is one of those things where you get on the line with another talk show host and you can't get off the phone, you know, that's happened to me twice this week already. But what I had suggested, what I'm going to do is just kind of give you the floor and let you give my audience a quick overview of this. And as we go through this, you know, I'll pose some questions to you, open up the phone lines in the second hour, because, you know, there are people that are trying to figure out how to opt out of this spider web. And then there are other people that really, at their particular point in life, and from my point of view, really shouldn't, okay? But I want to get into this with you and, you know, just start from the beginning and let's get through and, you know, see what your whole concept is. Go ahead.
Well, one of people's heroes in this political movement was Thomas Jefferson, and he has a very good quote. He says, "Nothing can stop the man with the right mental attitude from achieving his goal, and nothing on earth can help the man with the wrong mental attitude." And that, in my opinion, is a truism. If you have, if you understand what he's referring to and the context he's referring to it, he's literally referring to the man who has nothing binding him. Okay, so we have to understand, when I say a natural person, that is still a fiction. You have to know that when I say artificial person, natural person, person, etc., etc., the plural of person is not people. That's the first important lesson. The plural of the word person is persons. We are persons of the United States. We are not the people of the United States. And that should be the cornerstone of everything that you hear today. Well, you are not one of the people. You are a person.
Okay, that brings something else to mind, Clint, and I overheard you say this. Matter of fact, I believe I mentioned it yesterday on my program. The preamble to the United States Constitution, this is, "We the people of the United States, in order for a more perfect union, blah, 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 blah." When they say "we," they're not really referring to us. Is that correct?
Well, they cannot. You cannot form a contract and put it upon everyone in the world or everyone that you choose without their voluntary consent. You can't just suddenly say, we can't get together, Michael, and create a new constitution and say "we the people" and include everybody. There's just, for one thing, you know, you can't even do that with a petition, let alone a constitution, right? So you cannot, obviously the constitution does not include everybody in the world. If that were the case, then you would have no purpose for citizenship. Obviously the constitution did not include slaves. They actually passed an amendment in 1961 that would have made slavery permanent before the Civil War. It was passed by the House, it was passed by the Senate, and it was signed by the President. It went into law. States started ratifying it right before the Civil War broke out. It would have made slavery a perpetual entity, which meant that the term black is a color of law. So it's the law that colors you, either white or black. These don't mean what you think they do. It has nothing to do with skin color. It has to do with your blood. When we look up blood and what's called an attainder or a corruption of blood, that is what we suffer. Our blood has been turned black. In other words, it's not recognized by the law. So these people who set up this system, Ed Rivero calls them, these scoundrels who set up this system, these lawyers and these masons, who set up the Constitution, and by the way, constitutions are a dime a dozen. We're the only nation in the world that actually celebrates its Constitution as if it's something special. I mean, the Book of Constitutions is a Masonic book. It's nothing special. I know people don't like to hear that, but even Washington himself, when talking about the Declaration of Independence, was like, "Yeah, it's not original. It's just the sentiment of the time. We didn't do anything original." Right, so you gotta tone it down a little bit. You gotta pull your patriotism back, or what I call Stockholm syndrome, and look at the facts. Look at what the truth of the matter is. And the only way we can look at the truth is to look at the history of what they did. Not the great shining pictures of Washington, who looks like God on the top of the Capitol building, surrounded by angels. Right, that's not what we should be looking at.
Okay, well, okay? Let me interject something real quick here, and it's interesting you brought that up, and it ties part and parcel into what I had just watched last night and mentioned at the beginning of this program. I have done some research into the history of World War II, and I've peeked around the edges, and I've looked at different things, and I've, you know, actually done shows on it, you know. And then I went in and watched the movie last night, "The Greatest Story Never Told," and I got a much clearer picture of the entire scenario of World War II. And that's why, that's, you know, same thing here, is that if we step back a little bit, just like I did last night with this other topic, and we take a look at it in a different context, then maybe we'll have a greater explanation of what has really happened here. So with that, go ahead.
Well, I mean, if you're referring to, I mean, if you want to talk about World War II, we can certainly talk about that. But see,
that wasn't why I brought that up. What I'm doing is tying that into my perception of World War II being broader now than it was before last night, which is same thing that what I'm trying to do with you here. So let's know.
Well, because what that documentary does, and I'm familiar with it, is it shows you some actual facts that cannot be disputed. In other words, written facts, pictorial facts, things that show a completely different light on what was actually happening. And that's what happens when you start understanding, for instance, the words of the Bible. You can't read the Bible in English. You can only read it in what's called the higher language or the king's language. Doesn't mean it's higher or better. It just means that it's a higher in law. Right? So when you're reading the Bible, which is a copyrighted piece of the king, of the Crown Corporation, mm-hmm. and when you're reading the common law, or any law for that matter, you must know the terms of that art. Now, terms of art is a very, very important concept, because everything is an art, whether you're a doctor, a lawyer, a politician, a botanist, whatever it is, whatever business you're in, you have your own terms of art. If I'm sitting there and I'm a doctor and I have a nurse and I ask for a scalpel and she gives me a hammer, you know, I'm going to be in some serious trouble. I'm not going to be able to function as a doctor if my nurse doesn't know my terms of art. Do we agree on that?
Yes, go ahead.
So what happens when a judge talks to me and I speak to him in the common language and he's speaking into me in a higher language, the legal language, which is completely opposed or opposite to the common language? I'm going to say some things that are going to get me into some serious trouble because I have no idea what I'm saying. I'm
but
in a setting.
Clint,
of course they know that.
Yeah.
Of course.
They're tricking you in the witch's court, if I might coin a phrase from Eric the Screamer. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, read the Making of a Slave, and it's very clear that the slave can never be on par or equal to the master, and the only way that the slave can ever be equal is to learn the master's language. That's it. That's the only way.
Okay.
And that is why it is said that by many people, including Horace Greeley and a lot of prominent figures throughout history, who are actually part of this elite group, this bloodline. And by the way, the answer to your question is this Constitution was created for ourselves and our posterity, meaning the bloodline of the kings of England and our posterity, our children.
Right. And that's... Yes, I was going to touch on that, because when it says we the people, they're really talking about, and it made total sense to me when you mentioned that on John's show.
Right.
It's for their children and their children's children, all those who are far off, and incorporating that into passing down, which I was an estate planner for 20 years, so I totally get it, passing down whatever it is to their children and all of those who are far off. It has nothing to do with us. Go ahead.
Exactly, and you must understand that. You must understand that, because if you don't, and you do, and see, that's our commonality, is that we think we are the people. We think, and we're trained, and we're completely in the delusion, the purposeful delusion, that we are the people. And I'll explain why that is not the case as we
are
go
the
14th.
Well, excuse me, are we not the 14th Amendment people, according to them?
Well, I'll put it to you this way, okay? When we're talking about the Constitution, what are we talking about? We're talking about terms of art. Who wrote the Constitution? Was it you? Was it me?
No.
Or was it them?
It was them.
Okay, so who then, as we all sit out here and argue, oh, that's constitutional, unconstitutional, oh, this, that, who then defines the terms of what they wrote?
Them.
Is it you? Is it
no.
me? Well,
no,
so and- who? So where are you going to go to find the source? Where will you go to find the source of the words that make up the Constitution? Will you go to Clint Richardson or John Stadtmiller or Alex Jones, or will you go to, say, Bouvier's 1856 dictionary, which was commissioned by Congress to actually define the terms that were written and have to do with the Constitution?
Well, I guess that's where you'd go then. All right. And okay, so let us go there since you are.
So in other words, a primary source. You're going to go to a, that's what I call myself. I'm a primary source researcher. I don't listen to other people. I don't listen to radio anymore. I specifically, if I hear something, I go verify it and generally prove it wrong. Because primary source is often different than what you hear around the way in a lot of, because we romanticize. We want things to be true that aren't. Mm-hmm. And when we live in a lie is the truth. we all live in our own little lie, and when we hear the truth and that truth is against our lifestyle, when we pretend to be something we're not, it offends us. It really, you know, it shouldn't, because it's the truth. And
I get it. I mean, it's up is down, right is left, you know, fake is real and all that good stuff. So I get it.
Right. So what we're talking about here, when it says we the people, you'll notice, and people for some reason don't question these things like I do. I don't really know why it is that I was born this way, that I question and I look at every little detail. But you'll notice that the people is capitalized. We is capitalized. The is not capitalized. People is capitalized. Union is capitalized. Tranquility is capitalized. Like, certain words are capitalized. And we call that a caponym. A caponym is a specific thing in language that changes the meaning of the word. Okay, so any word that's capitalized in the Constitution has the meaning that they set forth.
Interesting. Okay.
So if I say the people, generally I can call us all the people. Mm-hmm. But if I'm talking about the people of the Constitution and their posterity, I must refer to a certain group of people as defined by them in a caponym, in a capitalized word.
And in this case, we're speaking of the, quote, bloodline, right? Go ahead.
Well, you're speaking of, I mean, look who signed the Constitution. All of them coming from the bloodlines of the kings of England. And people say, well, wait a minute. Think about who came over here. Think about who colonized. Who was it? It wasn't even men. It was a corporation. It was the equivalent to the East India Company going over and conquering other places, other lands. We were a corporation, the Virginia Company, etc., coming over here as part of the King of England. And guess what? If you read the earlier writings, and this is why it's so important to look at the Bible and understand these terms, when the colonists, before this became, quote-unquote, the United States of America, which were the 13 colonies become states, united, before the United States was ever actually created as a corporation in Washington, D.C., where it was just Congress assembled as statesmen representing the states. That is the true legitimate United States. It's not a building. It's a people. It's a representative body of men representing the states themselves. That is the legitimate Congress. And then they recreated themselves into a corporation, created Title II, which is called Congress, and made themselves members or employees of themselves, basically. So they became employees in this massive holding company. I call it the company store or the slave holding company.
And then they declared that July 4, 1776, correct?
Sure, sure.
Okay.
And that's important because, you know, time is an essential element in all of this, because there's such thing as an epoch. For instance, we're on the Anno Domini calendar, which is from the year of our Lord. It's called the year of our Lord. The problem is every year is the year of our Lord, so I'm afraid that actually refers to the king or the pope, because they are God.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why that is when we come back.
All right, yeah, there's one of those classic terms. American beginning, Michael Hertzberger, coming to you live from the Valley of the Sun. Yes, I remember exactly when I lost my mind. It was about midway through first hour of John Stadler's show last Friday when I was listening to Clint. And speaking of Clint, let's get back to Clint. Clint, continue. Go ahead.
Well, I left off with, what is God? And that's the important message. Because when you got to understand that the Pope is the vicar of God or the vicar of Christ, meaning the replacement or anti. Anti just means in place of, instead of, or a replacement of. The king, same way. So when the colonists came over here, they actually referred to the king as God. Because God is a generic term. I don't want to offend anybody here. This is history. This is very verifiable. I've blogged about it. There's sources all over the place. God just means magistrate. God means anything in authority. Okay, and to prove that, just go to any judicial site, go to any that keeps court cases, look up some old court cases, and they still do it sometimes, and you'll see that when we go to court, we didn't plead to the judge as we do now, we prayed to the God of the court.
Interesting.
That is the actual words used in the transcripts of the old cases, because it was a very well-known and understood fact that the term God meant whoever was in authority over you. Nowadays, we've lost that completely, even though it's part of the record, and it's part of the colonies' records that we, as colonists, we had God-given rights, the rights to the laws of nature, and those rights came from the king. That's why we had them. All right, so this is a very important part of history that we cannot ignore, because the whole thing is based on that concept of the false god, the replacement, the anti-god, if you will.
Okay,
because
go ahead. No, I was just going to say, but okay, so it's the god in the legal context, but then, you know, I could throw in there, but there's a god of the universe, and, you know, that's
right.
Debatable.
But you see, that's the important part, because here we now transfer to the Bible, keeping in mind that the Bible is the common law. It is the foundation of all law. It is called the law of nature, not the natural law, the law of nature. Nature and God are irreplaceable terms in that manner, because when you're talking about Jehovah, or the four letters, J-H-V-H, whatever it is, right? The unspeakable word, which was a ridiculous custom of the Jews, right? Jehovah, and of course they didn't have a J, so I'm just going with the modern tongue, basically. But Jehovah, when the Bible was written, Jehovah was used. It wasn't the word God, okay? When the Bible was written, words like magistrate, king, Theos, which meant godlike, Elohim, which is in the first Genesis, which is actually the book of Moses. The word Genesis wasn't attached to it till later. Okay, the Elohim, the gods, created the world. What does Christ say? He says, don't be part of the world. See, this is, it's very interesting when you get the right translation of the Bible and you understand what it's saying. The gods created the heaven and the earth, the Elohim, right? That is not Jehovah. Jehovah is, as you say, the universe, the every aspect of self-existence, life itself, all as one universe, as we, you know,
how about,
have called
how
it.
About the, how about the omnipotent multitude of atoms? How's that?
Whatever it is, the only really important aspect of this to know and understand and go by is that it is self-evident truth or self-existence. So when I look at a flower growing in nature, I cannot deny its existence. It is part of God. When I look at you, Michael, and I don't add your surname, your legal name, I know that you are a self-existent part of God. We're all part of God. See, the idea of religion was to externalize God, meaning Jehovah, from nature. So God created the universe and somehow sits outside of it. Well, no, that's not the definition. You see, Jehovah is the only time where we see that the word God is a verb. And this was the most spiritual thing that I've ever understood. God is a verb. So Jehovah is a verb. That means when you say the supreme being, that means all that is in being right now. That means all that is self-existent right now. That is the definition of God or Jehovah. And that's why they call it the law of nature or the law of God. They're interchangeable terms, right? So we're doing everything we can to go against Jehovah. Now, what did the king do? There's also Archon. There's also, so all these terms that were very specific. If I said Theos, I meant godlike. I meant a magistrate. I meant, you know, if I said Archon, the Gnostics called the Archons as brain parasites, right? So there's all kinds of words that are stricken throughout the Bible. And they all got translated or mistransliterated by the king purposely into the word God. So that meant that every time a man, a king, a magistrate of some you know, said, "I want all the firstborn killed." We were then say, "Well, gee, that God's a real a-hole. Well, how could God do this? Oh, I can't worship a God that's such a jerk." Mm-hmm. Because the translation was that men are God. That was the king's doing, because the king acts as God.
Okay, well, there's a lot to swallow. All right, we'll be back in a few minutes. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, with my special guest, Wendt Richardson. Stick around, more to come. All right, folks, we're back with The American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, with my special guest, Clint Richardson, and there you are. Now, there's some real bumper music. I won't back down. I don't do it. Clint Richardson doesn't do it. John Stadtmiller doesn't do it. And a litany of other hosts on this network that don't do it. That said, let's get back to Clint. Clint, continue with this as you confuse me even more. Go ahead.
Well, I just want you to know that what I said before the break, first of all, it's not my opinion. I'm not coming up with this off. I'm not creating a new religion, et cetera, et cetera. I'm telling you out of Strong's Concordance, every time you see a word in the Bible, you need to go to the Greek lexicon, to the Chaldean lexicon, to the Strong's Concordance, especially Strong's Concordance, because it's specifically made for the King James Bible, so that you can understand the actual intent of the word. Remember, the king changed these words to confuse. So again, you think that the actions of men are the actions of God, i.e. the actions of nature itself, as if nature consciously is going to come and do something to you. The only way that God is going to do something to you is if you're stupid enough, like we are, to poison your water supply. Yes, you're going to get cancer. That's the wrath of God. You've destroyed the beautiful system that was created for you. You've poisoned your own life-giving jewel. And yeah, that's the wrath of God. But all these other instances, when you translate the word into archon or king or judge or governor or president, whatever, those are men, and that's why the confusion. That's why people turn away from the Bible, because religion teaches that in every case the word God means God. It means Jehovah. What they don't tell you is that Jehovah is very seldom used. It's very seldom that is a reference to the actual meaning of the word that we suggest. Now, it's not a man in the sky. It's not a man sitting in the clouds. In fact, it's important to note that the Bible itself is not religion at all. Religion builds around idols. Okay, it turns whatever it religiously worships into an idol. The Bible is not religion, and the laws of the United States, the court cases that surround the Bible, are very clear that when it's talking about the common law, it's talking about the Bible in a non-secular, a non-religious way. It's not a religion. It's the teachings of Christ. And Christ, again, you have to embrace the metaphor. Christ is a personification of the law of God. You follow Christ. You don't worship Christ. You follow in the footsteps of Christ. You're not supposed to worship Christ as God. In fact, there's plenty of times where Christ sat there and prayed to God, because to Jehovah, his father, nature itself, because he couldn't figure out what to do. He was confused, or he needed guidance, and so he actually prayed to God, right? So obviously that means that the whole concept of the Trinity and all that stuff, that's all religious doctrine, and the Bible is very clear not to get lost in religion. Take no other doctrine. Doctrine means law. Doctrine is defined as law. Take no other law before the Bible. And that's why the Bible is at the foundation of the common law. Once you get past the Bible, once you break that law of nature, once you start accepting persons, places, and things, i.e. the names of things, the nouns, once you start accepting that you're a number, that you're a Mr. or a Mrs., that you have a title, a flattering title, all of which the Bible says do not respect in any circumstance. Once you start doing this, you've now broken the foundation of common law. Well, I'm here to tell you there is no common law in the United States, and there are no common law offenses against the United States, because the common law doesn't exist in the United States, and that means the Bible doesn't exist. In fact, when they define but as far as religious freedom goes, the freedom of religion, as they call it, mm-hmm. See, they changed it for us. For us, it means the freedom to believe without the freedom to act on that belief. You are free to believe whatever the heck you want. If you want to believe in the flying spaghetti monster as your god, you are more than welcome to do that, but you cannot, under any circumstances, act upon the moral law, which is the Bible. You cannot act upon the unwritten law in the written law world. Okay, and that's what the legal realm is. It's all words, words created by men. Natural law, or the law of nature, is self-evident. We all know what's right and wrong, all right? We all know what nature is. We all know what our true selves are. It's when we start adding fiction, lies, artifice, names, titles, and we start giving those names and titles more authority than the real thing. In other words, agency, representation. Okay, so if you're to understand your place in the United States, you must understand this one concept, because that is what we're in. We're in what's called an agency relationship. Now, to start with agency, let's go back to Stanley Milgram. Are you familiar with the Milgram experiments?
No, sir, I am not, but let me interject here one thing. When you start talking about agency, now, to me, from what I'm gathering here, is the statutory law in the United States and the Bible actually are bipolar. Okay, and the second thing is, as far as agency is concerned, I lost my train of thought here. Okay, so the Bible and the statutory law of the United States are two separate entities. Right. Well, continue, and
The written law is that which is opposed to the unwritten law. The law of man is that which is opposed to the law of nature. You can say it any way you want. Okay, the law of man is that which is opposed to the law of God. All right. So the Roman law is what we're under. The Roman or strict law is opposed to the law of nature, as is defined. All right. So it's opposed to the Bible.
Okay.
The only way that the Roman law, the strict law, the words can apply to you is if you claim to be an agent.
Okay, well, I just got my thought back. Okay, so that, you know, does that enter into, you know, if the Bible is the actual common law, you know, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, and all that good stuff that everybody knows, and then we have the statutory law or the agency,
well,
right? Go ahead.
Okay, so it's the Old Testament. It wasn't replaced by the New Testament or the New Law, again, which Christ is your example to follow. Mm-hmm. It wasn't replaced, it was fulfilled, as they say. So the New Law, the New Testament, fulfilled the Old Testament. The Old Testament said, do not kill, do not, thou shalt not do this, thou shalt not do that. But that's the law of the Jew. Okay. The important part about that is that the way that the word Jew, and Jew wasn't in the Bible, it was Yahudi, and Ayudios, okay? And those two words were what we commonly say is the Jew, as translated again by the king. Those two words meant those who were opposed to Christ. Christ meaning the new law, okay? The law of nature. So those who are opposed to the law of nature, that is the Jew. And that's why they... That's why the money, the love of money, the love of interest, the love of everything that's fictional, the love of characters, of persons, right? So the old law said, thou shalt not kill. But you see, they figured out a way around that. They said, well, what if I'm a king and I have sovereignty? Then I can kill. What if I'm a soldier of the king and I get a license from God to kill? Can I then kill and not be breaking the commandments? Well, sure, because the king, acting as the replacement of God or the replacement of Christ, tells me I can kill, right? So I'm acting in agency of the king, who's my principal, and I'm killing a third party on his behalf. I have a license to kill. License means anarchy or lawlessness. Okay, any license that you get will always be permission to break the law. Period. End of story. That's what a license is. Okay, so what did the New Testament do then? Said, hey, thou shalt not respect any person. Thou shalt not respect any flattering title. See, these aren't the Ten Commandments anymore. These are the mortar that goes between the bricks. These are the thing that fulfill and stop you from acting in fiction acting in persona. I'm a soldier, therefore I have license to kill. I'm a general, therefore I have order to drop a bomb on Hiroshima. I'm this, I'm that. I'm the president, I'm the king. See, that's the New Testament. The New Testament says no, respect, give no man authority. God, i.e. Jehovah, the laws of nature are your only authority. That is the highest law. The state recognizes it as the highest law. But the state, these men who want to be gods over you, must get you into an agency relationship. In other words, the devil or Satan just means that which is adversarial to God or nature. Okay, your adversary is anyone who tries to get you into a contract. Bible says do not contract. Do not swear oaths. Do not do any of the things that we do as a daily function of being a citizen of a false god, i.e. a corporation called the United States.
So you just tripped my trigger here. The thought that I lost because of this massive overload of information that I'm getting, of which even my siphon of a brain can't correlate it that quickly, is adhesion contracts. So the natural law of the Bible, and then they've got us all caught up in this system. By what? Adhesion? I mean, we didn't just sign our name. We didn't know, for example, when, I got my first job. He said, well, you got to get a Social Security card at 16 years old. That was then. This is now where you got it before you even walk out of the hospital or taken out of the hospital. That they didn't tell us what kind of strings went along with that. You had to do that in order to get paid. Now, these adhesion, I mean, in reading of the Internal Revenue Service Code years ago, I find that it's an assumed liability. And everybody said, oh, yeah, okay, the taxpayer pays. I must be a taxpayer, so I must pay. Well, if you really read between the lines like you have done in this realm, I have done in the Internal Revenue Service realm, that doesn't apply. You are assumed liable unless you know how to be not liable. So
exactly.
Yes, so those two things between you and I correlate perfectly. So this is why I understand where you're going with this. I'm trying to break this down in a logical sense because I know the audience is out there. And by the way, I'm going to open up the phone lines. Go ahead in the second hour. Go ahead.
You got to understand one thing, and this is very difficult for people because logic doesn't apply to the legal realm. The legal realm is against reason. It's against logic. This is why they can change the meaning of a word at any time to suit their needs. This is why the law changes, or the interpretation of the law by the courts changes on a daily basis, right? It's strict, but it's only as strict as the current precedent set by the courts, right? You look at some of the quotes by the courts, they say they are the government, they are the lawmakers, and everybody knows it, except the people who are under the law. Right, so agency is the legal relation founded upon the express or implied contract of the parties, or created by law, by virtue of which one party, i.e. the agent, is employed and authorized to represent and act for the other, i.e. the principal, in business dealings with third persons. Okay, so how does that affect us? I, as a man, have chosen to abandon God, i.e. abandon nature and the laws thereof. I've given up my unalienable rights. I've sold those rights in exchange for political rights and protection. I've just become an agent to the United States, a corporation located in Washington, D.C. that is not part of any of the 50 states. In other words, it's not part of the land structure of what we call the United States of America. It is a corporation entitled, quote, United States in Congress. Okay? So the United States in Congress assembled is the legitimate or de jure government of the states when they get together and they do things. And then you have the United States, which is a foreign corporation, which we are all stuck in through this agency relationship, through citizenship. Okay, what that means is that we have been taken from our what it would be called our natural state. I was born in California, but my status as a United States citizen was birthed in the United States of America, or excuse me, the United States, which is the district of Columbia. So,
which is a corporation, right?
a corporation created by Congress,
right?
Which you know is not necessarily a bad thing. It was of course intended to be a bad thing, but I mean when Congress creates something, they create it into the United States. They don't create it. They don't have the power of creation, in other words. So they have to create, and they put it into this corporate structure. The president is, of course, the CEO of that structure, and there are millions and millions of employees that are unelected under that president in the executive branch. So that when they create, say, the Federal Reserve, they create it into the executive. They give the executive full power as a king, essentially, which is a whole other subject that would
take up another show.
that's where the nature of emergency war powers comes from. So every time you hear a presidential directive or an executive order, that's because Congress in 1933, I believe it was, passed a law that's still on the books, and you can read it, and it says everything that the president does from 1917, I believe, or from 1933 is hereby approved. Congress already approved the actions of the president from 1933 on. That is why the president has so much power. And Congress is fully aware of this. They can stop it at any time. Don't ever think that there is actually any true competition between governments, between the agencies of government, because we're not talking about the de jure government. We're not under the judicial branch. There is no judicial branch for United States citizens. We're under administrative law. Okay? What does that mean? Well, that means that we're in an agency relationship. In other words, I have a status. The word status is a simile to person or persona, a mask in the Latin, right? So I have a status as a United States citizen. That is my persona, and I use that as what is called a commercial vessel. Very much, remember, we're on the law of the sea, not the land.
Right, maritime.
Right, so everything's under this admiralty law. I fly the flag of the United States, not my state flag, because I'm not a state citizen. Right, I'm a United States citizen, and therefore, I'm an agency. What does that mean? I'm in an express or implied contract created of the parties or created by law by virtue of which one party, the agent, that's me, is employed and authorized to represent and act for the other, that's the United States, the principal, in business dealings with third persons. Okay, so who's the third person? Who's left? The state. See, I've been plucked out of the land. I've been plucked out of the territory. When the states were created, they were territories of the United States. Certain people got together, the bloodlines, the landholders, and they created the state constitutions. They took the private lands, and the public lands were all released to the United States, as it says in the constitutions and the enabling acts. Okay, so all those public lands where we exist as United States citizens are governed by the United States, that corporation. The whole government of each state is set up to govern us.
Well, with that, there's another load that I have to siphon through.
We are foreigners, in other words.
That makes sense. When we get back from the break, I'm going to tell you why. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, coming to you live from the Valley of the Sun. Be right back. Stick around. More to come with Clint Richardson. All right, folks. Yes, Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, doing the best he can here with Clint Richardson. Thanks for putting that bumper music in there. I gave it to Dan yesterday because it was so blasé. It was just, you know, the instrumental to The American Awakening over and over and over again. So thanks, Dan. I appreciate that. You're right, Johnny, on the spot with it. Okay, let's continue, Clint. Go ahead.
Agency. Well, you know, the last thing we said is you're a foreigner, okay? Everybody listening that is a United States citizen, you're considered a foreigner by the state where you reside because your domicile is the United States. Your birth certificate says you're a United States citizen, not a state citizen. All right? So, in other words, you got to consider the 50 states as the 50 squares on a Monopoly board.
Mm-hmm.
You have private landholders who created the state constitutions out of the territory, i.e. land. Territory comes from the word terra, meaning land, and they are the landholders. They privately own that, and they're under their own private law. You got to understand, these people are not United States citizens. United States was created to hold slaves. Okay, 13th Amendment, 14th Amendment were basically the enfranchisement of slaves into the United States, taking the right of private slave ownership and putting it into the government. So you have the 14th Amendment, quote-unquote, citizen. It's actually called a denizen. You should look up the word denizen. It means citizen, but it also means basically a sort of a, almost like a limbo, state of limbo. You can't hold land, you can't do anything because you are not attached to the land. You're not attached to the territory where you reside. you reside in the public lands of the United States. You're not a citizen of the state, therefore you're not the people, the word people being capitalized. You're foreign agents of the United States. You are non... what do they see? So you're an alien, literally.
Okay, yeah, no, you're a non-resident alien, which is, it makes perfect sense.
You're a resident alien.
Well, they can collect on resident aliens as well, the Internal Revenue Service Code. But this also goes back to 1933 when Louis McFadden got on the floor on House Resolution 192, and he said, we're all enemies of the state. So in context, the reality is we indeed are enemies of the, quote, state, right?
Well, it's more accurate to say that you have your potential enemies of the state. Okay. They changed the wording of the law that made you potential. So in other words, all that it takes is for them to give you the flattering title, enemy of the state, terrorist, insurgent, whatever they want to call you in their code, and all of a sudden you're an enemy of the state. So at any time you can be declared an enemy of the state. And the truth of the matter is, the Civil War never ended. Again, a whole other topic. If you just consider that, the Civil War never ended. We're occupied. Each state is occupied by the United States. The Labor Code even would agree with me. In the first part of the Labor Code, it says the presence of a foreign military represents the marshals of law. Why do you think you have United States military bases, not only in every country around the world, but in every state of the United States? Okay, so you got to consider that you are basically a voluntary subject, voluntary slave of the United States, and you're being guarded. You're being protected by the United States.
Well, according to them, I'm a human resource, Clint. You know. Anyway, we got to go to the top of the hour break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Michael Herzog with Clint Richardson. Another hour of this. Phone lines will be open, 800-313-9443 if you want to jump into this mix. Be right back.
It makes me crazy. Oh, Clint makes me crazy.
Hi, I'm back. Michael Herzog, second hour of the American Awakening with my special guest, Clint Richardson. Now, I'm going to open up the phone lines here in about the next 10, 15 minutes, but I want to make sure that everybody understands, and Clint gives a good breakdown of exactly what the term agency means. So, folks, again, you know, the old motto for Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth? Well, let's see if you can handle the truth. Clint, go ahead.
Well, as the Bible says, I am not your enemy for telling you the truth. Keep that in mind. When I talk about agency, keep in mind the word agent means attorney. Okay, so when I go to court and I say I am Clint Richardson, I've just assumed that I'm my own attorney. I'm appearing as the agent for service of process. In other words, the agent is the man appearing as the and representing the status or the person of the United States. That's why you have to distinguish between the man and the status, the man and the persona.
Right.
Okay. So the citizenship. I'm here representing the citizenship. When I say I am Clint Richardson, I've just put myself into that position. I can no longer get out of it. I've contractually said that I am acting as that person. But I can also appear in court and I can say, well, I'm the agent for service of process representing the status in question, and I can bring the birth certificate and I can say, you know, you're basically saying I'm the attorney for this person. Okay, there's a big difference between those two, because now you're not appearing as the person, you're appearing as the agent or attorney. All right? Now, what's important about that is what it means to be in this agentic relationship, because a status is like a rental car. Okay, when I go rent a car, I don't qualm about which law that car is under. I know that I have to follow not only the rental company rules per the contract, because I'm renting its car as an agent, right? I also have to follow the laws of the road, rules of the road, the DMV code, et cetera, everything that car is under it as far as the law. Well, there's the rental car and a status of a United States citizen is really not that much difference. I must follow the laws that attach to that commercial vessel, whether it's a vehicle or whether it's a person, a status, right? So the law is attached to the person, not the man. And that's why when you appear in court as an attorney, attorneys don't ever get in trouble for their clients now, do they?
No, no, no. And they'll always come out, even when you lose, the attorney will tell you in some way, shape, or form it was a victory, even if it was a small one because of X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, sure. Attorneys can't be persecuted for the statuses they represent, and that's why when you go to court, you should never go as. You need to learn a lot. Like, there's a whole treatise on agency that you'd have to read and everything to really learn this. But when you go to court, if you appear as the agent, they don't know what the hell to do. If you know what you're talking about, you have the right language, because suddenly they can't control you. You're an attorney. They can't say you're in contempt of court because you're an attorney. You're the attorney. You're not the person. So anyway, let's go back to Milgram. Stanley Milgram in the 1960s, he did experiments to basically examine what they call the agentic relationship. Which means that I have an employee, employer, trustor, trustee, citizen, master, master, slave. All those are agentic relationships. An agent always has a principal, and the agent is always dealing or representing the principal in transactions with third parties. United States is a principal. I am the agent using its property or its status, and I'm dealing with states, which are third parties because I'm foreign. Okay. The problem with this is when I'm a soldier or I'm a police officer, I have an agentic outlook on things, and here's what that means. By the end of his experiments, this is out of Harper's Magazine titled The Perils of Obedience, and he stated, "The legal and philosophical aspects of obedience are of enormous importance, but they say very little about how most people behave in concrete situations. I set up a simple experiment at Yale University to test how much pain an ordinary citizen, i.e. agent, would inflict on another person simply because he was ordered to by an experimental scientist. Stark authority was pitted against the subject's or the participant's strongest moral imperatives against hurting others, and with the subject's ears ringing with the screams of the victims, authority won more often than not. In other words, a guy that was dressed up, he wasn't a doctor, but he pretended to be one, he played one on TV, right? He had a white coat on, and he said, you must press that button is going to inflict a stronger and stronger shock with every question that they get wrong. Until the point where you know you're at the point where you're going to kill this person, okay? Authority won more often than not. The extreme willingness of adults to go to almost any lengths on the command of an authority constitutes the chief finding of the study and the fact that most urgently demanding explanation. Ordinary people simply doing their jobs, i.e. their employees, which is an agent of a principal, of right. An employer, and without any particular hostility on their part, can become agents in a terrible, destructive process. Moreover, even when the destructive effects of their work become patently clear, and they are asked to carry out actions incompatible with fundamental standards of morality, relatively few people have the resources needed to resist authority." Okay, that's a quote straight from Milgram in 1974. What is the resource? What is the resource that very few people have to resist authority? Well, all the elites through history will tell you that Bible-reading people cannot be enslaved. You cannot be made into an agent if you understand that the very foundation of law, which says don't be an agent, don't be a person, don't be an employee, do not contract, do not do any of these things. In an American psychologist, it was said the two theories that this has to do with this, with the agentic relationship, which is what we are. The first is a theory of conformism based on Solomon Asch conformity experiments describing the fundamental relationship between the group of reference and the individual person. A subject who has neither ability nor expertise to make decisions, especially in a crisis, so under stress, will leave decision-making to the group and its hierarchy. In other words, we are patients of, which means victims of doctors. Right? The group is the person's behavioral model. Now, the second is the agentic state theory, wherein, per Stanley Milgram, the essence of obedience consists in a fact that a person comes to view themselves as the instrument for carrying out another person's wishes, and they therefore no longer see themselves as responsible for their actions. once this critical shift of viewpoint has occurred in the person, all of the essential features of obedience follow.
You know,
ask yourself, why do they put soldiers, and for that matter, police officers, mm-hmm. through basic training? You tear down the man, you turn him into an agent.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to interject here because as you spoke this, the thoughts going through my head were not only with the police department and the military, but also the medical profession itself, and the immunity that they have with the pharmaceutical drugs and so forth, and also the IRS, because the IRS, the agents of the IRS, can strip people of their livelihood, strip them of everything they own, and as far as they're concerned, they're only doing their job. And this is right in the Internal Revenue Service manual, because yes, they go through a basic training as well as the soldier does. So it's fascinating, and it transcends through all facets of this.
All of us are guilty of this. We all treat certain people differently than ourselves. Well, I'm a manager at my company. I'm a private, and you're just a corporal. We all treat each other by our status, not as gifts from God, essentially, but not as equals. Right now, this is important as well, because when they wrote the Declaration of Independence, they made a huge mistake. They said that the rights of man are unalienable. Okay, if that were true, the God-given rights of man are unalienable. If that was true, none of this could happen. There could be no contracts. There could be nothing. So what they did is they changed that. They said in the state constitutions, they said the rights of man are inalienable.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between those two words, according to the courts, is that unalienable means your rights can never be taken or sold, okay? But inalienable means that your rights, given by God, as they say, and it's important to know that okay, this is what government... I don't care if you believe in God, and the government especially would love for you not to believe in God, because the whole system is based on God. If you say, I'm an atheist, well, great, then you must be governed by man. Because you cannot be self-governing under God, and those are the only two options you have. So you will always remain a slave to this system. Okay, that's important. That's not my opinion. That's government's opinion. That's what this whole system is based on. I'm not here to convince you that God exists. God's existence is literally the definition of existence. If you don't want to believe in existence, fine. Okay, that's what God is. That's how they define it. And the law of nature, therefore, is the law of existence. It's when you say stuff like I'm an atheist, it's actually so ridiculous. It's just that you've never been given the definition of what Jehovah is, what God is. So once you hear it, you realize that atheism is literally defined as the non-belief in the existence of existence. I don't believe in God, therefore I don't believe in existence. It's a ridiculous thing. It's a trick. And that means, again, presidents have said this. If you are not governed by God, meaning the law of nature, then you will be governed by men, period. You must either be self-governing under the law of nature, or you must be governed by this system of law that we're talking about. And unfortunately, this kind of system always goes corrupt. And we get into democracy, and it always fails. And then there's a spiritual awakening, kind of like the title of your show. And then it all fails again after 200 and something years, just like every other empire in existence. And I start to think that that's a purposeful cycle. They know it's going to fail. So this goes back to, again, I am an agent for the United States. The United States is my principal. I have taken a status offered by the United States. I have sold my God-given rights. Therefore, I have no rights in nature. I have accepted false, artificial, corporate, legal rights, legal meaning anti-God, according to a lot of authors. And I am now dealing with everything in an agentic relationship. In other words, when I go do business, when I put gas in my car, when I pick up the kids from school, I am acting in the agency of that doctrine of agency, the notion that everything I do is in commerce, in other words. Because I'm a foreigner, 100% of the time, I'm in an interstate commerce transaction because it's not my land. I'm on a permanent monopoly board, and everywhere I step is someone else's land, whether it's government land, property of the United States, or whether it's the property of a private landholder, the bloodline. Either way, I'm stepping on someone's land. I'm always going to pay a tax. I might get a surprise. I might get the community chest, right? I might take a chance. I might become a millionaire, but I'm still a slave.
Let me stop you for a minute here because you're really getting on a roll. I told the listening audience that opened up the phone lines at 10 after the hour, after we got through with the definition of agency. And the phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. But let's take Laura in Michigan. Laura, how are you? Do you have a question for Clint?
Yes, I do. I want to go back to the preamble about the posterity. Okay. I believe that we started Genesis. There was a six-day creation, and then the eighth day, when God saw that he needed someone to tend the gardens and to be a farmer. So he created Esha'adam, meaning the Adam that becomes ruddy in the face is a white man. So I think when the Founding Fathers, being very knowledgeable in the Bible, I believe that the posterity was for the Adamic race.
Okay. Well, no, actually... I see it there again. You have to go back and you have to understand what Adam means. Adam means human or mankind. Adam was not a singular person. Adam was a representation, an allegory, a metaphor for mankind, i.e. the common man. Adam fell. Okay, so we are a fallen people. When they call us mankind, they are calling us Adam. All right, so we have taken... the fruit from the tree of knowledge, which means the concepts and lies of men, the creations of men over God. That is the allegory. That is the metaphor that you're supposed to take from that. The Garden of Eden, when you translate the word garden in the Bible in the concordance, it actually means prison. But the word prison in that case is a good thing because it's actually protecting you from all of this fiction and all of these ways. You know, suddenly you're embarrassed. Suddenly you have to cover up with the fig leaf. And that has a whole nother discussion. But you're talking about eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. There is no good and evil in nature. It doesn't exist. We create what is good and what is evil. And therefore, we have fallen from quote-unquote nature or God. Because
well,
we respect.
I agree with you, Adam means man. There was a six-day creation where the Adams. I'm talking about Esha'adam. When you look at Strong's Concordance, he's a different person than just the Adam.
Yeah, but you have to understand. People don't like to hear this, but you have to take the Bible metaphorically. You cannot take it literally.
But that's why they got to get rid of us. They want to get rid of the Adamic race. That's what it is. People are talking about, oh, they try to get rid of. Because Eve, she had twins. One was sired by Adam, and one was sired by Satan in the garden. So that's where you got the Kenites, the offspring of Cain. You see? So, we're the Adamic race from Adam to Seth, because obviously... Cain killed Abel, so had to go through Seth. And we were going to be the race. Umbilical cord to umbilical cord would eventually Jesus would come from. So we're altruistic. Look how we are. We love animals. We take care of things. We don't destroy. We're altruistic. So that's our Adamic line. And we try to make things right.
Okay, well, you're welcome. You're welcome to your own interpretation, I guess, but that is not how it is written in the concordances or in the Bible. And you have to understand that every word, this is what's so interesting about the Bible, is that every word, every name, right? You look at the words like Adam. Adam means mankind. It doesn't mean man. It means mankind, the human race. Human means sophist. So, you look at the word Noah, it means to be at rest. you look at the Noah's three sons, which are Seth, Japheth, and what's the other one? Well, those do explain the three types of men. You have the angry, which is, I can't remember their names, I'm sorry. Seth actually means the tribe. Tribe doesn't mean anything like we think it does either. It means the tribe of the name, and that's what these people are. These are the tribe of the name. This is the bloodline. This is why the Bible says don't respect the name, don't respect the title, don't respect, it even says don't respect genealogy. Because that means that you're actually putting the mind and heart of the father upon the son, which is impossible. It doesn't pass that way. The blood passes, but nothing else does. That's why you have one good king and one bad king, right? So it says don't respect fabled genealogies. Don't respect these things. That's the new law. What you're referring to is the old law. The Jewish law, in other words. The Babylonian law.
A lot of people don't want to read all the begats. I think if they read all the begats, they'd see where the line went and how it worked. And I think,
what you're saying about the white, what you call the white race, if you will, is a very true statement. However, in the Bible, we're called the gullible. Okay, that means we want to do good, but we're very gullible. We're easily tricked. And that's how we're referred to.
Okay, I got to interject here. I got to go to a break. Laura, thank you so much for your call. We got to take a break. We'll be back in 3. Alan in Texas, hold on. You're up next. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, with my special guest, Clint Richardson. Be right back.
Once upon a time, you dressed so fine, threw the bumps of dime in your prime.
Just kidding you. All right, we're back. Now I got my bumper music going. I rock with that boy. That invigorates me. So got a couple of callers on the line. Mark in Philadelphia would be second up. Alan in Texas, you're up with Michael and Clint Richardson. How you doing? Hello, Alan in Texas.
Yeah, it's me. Can you hear? Am I here?
Yes, you're
Hello.
Here. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yes.
Hey, digitally speaking.
How do I say this without using it against myself? I'm a air-breathing bipedal mammal with dangly hardware who only enjoys the intimate company of those with non-dangly hardware. And I love both you guys. I mean, Clint, both you and Michael have been a big part of my coming out of this stupor and trying to get a better idea of what's going on in the world around me. And I'm not blowing smoke up your butt, but I am giving you a compliment. You know, the thought processes that y'all have instilled, that I listen to, and that y'all instilled it in me. I do a lot of thinking, I do a lot of listening, I do a lot of reading, and I thank you, Clint, for expressing what I cannot in a really straightforward, logical explanation of really what we're up against and what's been done to us, what is being done to us. And I'm glad to hear both of y'all on the air anytime I can. I miss both of you not being on the airwaves anymore. But
you are welcome, he with dangling hardware.
Like I said, I don't know if I can use man or woman or what anymore because they've weaponized everything against us. One question I do have is I've heard probably every possible explanation that everyone has. Everyone, you know, comes up and they've got remedy for, you know, through the court system and this and that, and, you know, I've got remedy, I know how to do it, you do this and you do that. Is there a remedy, Cliff, or is the whole thing just a game that's being played with us that they can change at any point that they want to? Is there actually any justice in the justice system anywhere at all?
There is no the justice system or the Justice Department is an executive branch. That's where the Bar Association and everything else is. So, no, it's administrative purely. There is no real law. There's no actual third branch of government that affects any of us. We do not have constitutional rights, and we don't have the right of tort. So, in other words, no, there is no remedy. I'll put it to you this way, man, and You know, a lot of people have been turned off by my ultimate goal was to find the truth. And ultimately, that necessarily led me to the understanding of the Bible. It had to, because it's, again, the foundation of law. And the legal books tell me that, right? So it's obvious once you see that. However, what I found is that through all these gurus offering you remedies, and what is Christ called? Christ is called the Redeemer.
Mm-hmm.
That means if you follow Christ, you will be redeemed from the law. The law in the Bible is a very bad word, unless you're talking about the natural or self-evident law, the written law. How do you be redeemed from the law? Through Jesus Christ. That is a metaphor meaning follow Christ, follow the law of God, follow the law of nature. Do not add anything unto your name, which is what we do through the birth process and everything else. So your question can be answered very simply. Have you seen the movie The Matrix?
I have, and I've also sat in a courtroom clip and heard in a sentencing trial and heard the defendant ask the judge, is this a common law or a statutory court? And this old judge was getting ready to retire, and he thought about everything he said because he knew he had an audience out there that was listening, and he thought about it for a second, and he goes, why, it's a statutory court. But do you know what the court record reflects? It reflects that the defendant said that this is a statutory court, not that the judge said that. So, sure. You know, I came to the realization at that point, you know, that just... You know, it's their game. They're not going to let us use it against them.
So remedy can only come to you in the form of money. The maximum of law when it comes to money is that money in and of itself is nothingness. It's nihilism, right? If you actually say, I'll sell this land for money, well, then you've just lost something real in exchange for something fiction. So the only remedy that you can get is money. Some people are happy with that. Of course, that's mammon, right? You cannot have... God and Mammon. You must choose between the two: your love of money, which is the belief in money, or your love of reality. So, if you're in the Matrix, can you have remedy when you're stuck in the Matrix? Can you get out of the Matrix without someone pulling you out? Right. That's the simile of
the. All
right.
Let me hold you over. We got to go to a break. Let me hold you over, Alan. Mark, stay on the line, and Francis in North Carolina. You guys will both be up next. Answer the question, totalitary, when we get back. Me crazy, Clint. Does that make me crazy, Mike Herzog? You're broken away. I am back with my special guest, Clint Richardson. Now we've got callers on the line. Mark in Philadelphia, you'll be up next. France in North Carolina, you're after Mark. Alan, to complete, I don't remember who was talking. Was it Alan or was it you, Clint, that was answering his question? Go ahead.
Oh, that guy with the dangling thing.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Hey, I've got just one more question, and I'll cede time to the other callers because, like you said, the smartest callers. Yeah, I believe that, and they've got a lot to add. One question, Cliff. Have I heard you say, is your book available now in a paper version? Because I don't care to read stuff on screens. I would love to get it.
It's free to download to anybody who wants it. And then I just asked if you want a paper copy of it, I just asked for a donation. And all the details are on the website. It's strawmanstory.info. And like I said, just download the book. It's a reference book. It teaches you the legal language, teaches you the language of the Bible, teaches you about this type of stuff. It's all my research, you know, trying to pack it all into a couple of books in a series. But yeah, I just ask a donation, not for the book itself, but just to keep me working and keep me giving everything freely, because that was my goal.
I'll find a way to get it, Clint. I'll get off here and then let the other callers get in. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, thanks, Al.
Absolutely. So, by the way, you know, one of the things that's going to be in my second book is a full and detailed topic of The Matrix, because I found the three books that The Matrix was actually based on. It's horrible plagiarization. Matrix in legal system actually means the protocol or first draft of a legal instrument from which all copies must be taken. Well, that's a description of your birth certificate. Mm. Matrix means womb, a place where anything is generated or formed. Well, that's your status now, isn't it? So, the womb, a mold.
All right, let's not get off and get too deep into this, because these callers have been waiting for a while.
Well,
go ahead.
So that is the Matrix. Your birth certificate is your Matrix. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Okay. All right, well, see, I already need to have you back again just to go into that topic. But with that being said, let's not keep Mark holding any further. Mark in Philadelphia, you're on with Michael and Clint. How you doing, buddy?
How's it going, guys? And thank you very much for receiving my call.
Okay.
I listened to you, Clint, before a few times, and I have to say this, that when you're with a co-host or a guest of a host, I think you articulate better. I'm getting more out of this than I have in previous times, and I know this stuff is deep, it's really articulate, and a lot of people can't really go there because they got too many things going on. So just a little background about me, where I was able to latch on to what, go ahead.
Are you saying that when I do a lecture by myself that I sound like Charlie Brown's teacher?
No, he says he'd rather listen to paint dry. That's what he's saying.
No, go ahead. No. Here's the thing. It's like the space between the notes. It's when you're with someone else, it draws out something good, and between the two of you, something is articulated even beyond the words, and I'll just leave it at that. I'm able to embrace where you're coming from, maybe more so than some, because in this life, I happen to have been adopted. By the age of 21, I lost both families through drama, trauma, and tragedy. Okay, the first family, my parents were extremely intelligent, but they were poor. Okay. The second family, they were so intelligent, but they were enterprising, and they were rich. But it didn't matter. I lost both of them. Okay, and so I was left with what? I was left with no references to guide my life, and I barely had a sense of a weaker sense of self because of my early childhood. I had been through a lot of trauma and drama, and you know, it was very trying. And
it's also very profitable. Very profitable for the state. Don't forget that.
Yeah. So through those great losses, I was left with what? An empty space and a whole lot of questions, and nobody could answer because nobody had been through that level of experience that I've been through that I could find. And anyway, so who am I? Where am I on this planet? What does all this mean? Okay. Oh, money is the answer. You think? I don't think so. My second family was rich, okay? And what was missing was a semblance of an understanding of God and nature and these things. So, but I grew up in the Midwest, the belt buckle of the Bible Belt, to be a matter of fact, okay? Churches galore everywhere. I call them religions, and I'm not into religion. So, but I want to challenge you with something. You said something earlier. It was 9 months ago that I discovered some facts about my natural family on my father's side. I found out that my great-great-grandfather served in the Civil War. And I found out he was a prisoner of war. He was in the Battle of the Wilderness, and he was a prisoner of war in Andersonville, Georgia. For 11 months, he survived there. And what many historians consider the worst prison of the Civil War, because of the conditions of the prison. Out of 45,000 men that went through there, 13,000 died within weeks of entering the gates of the prison because of the conditions of the prison. That's pretty horrific. There is a dramatic
illness. Same thing that happened in the German prison camps. The illnesses swept through and killed a lot of people.
Yeah. So here's what I'm bringing up, because something you said in the previous caller, Laura, I think you said something about that all we carry across is the blood. Well, I'm going to challenge you on that. That all you carry across is the blood, because in this life, I was very good in scholastics. I went to a small country school. We all knew each other. And so when it came time, I aced all the scholastic subjects pretty much. I really liked history, but I would prefer ancient history. Now, when it came time through those years to talk about the Civil War, I wanted to run out of the room. And my classmates would repeatedly wonder what was going on with me. And I'd say, I don't know. I just don't like it. It's the stupidest darn thing I've ever heard of, and I don't want to even talk about it. Now, I had no reference in this life to feel that way. But I'm going to tell you something. My great-great-grandfather's DNA reached through to me and hit the memory of his horror that he went through. I think that's why I felt that way. Now, you might differ on that, but I think that there's something to that. Maybe I'm wrong.
And maybe genetically speaking, the epigenome would be a good example. You know, you have switches that go on and off that direct your behavior, et cetera, et cetera. So, no, I would agree with that. There is a spiritual connection, and it flows through the DNA that's passed upon you, and the blood flows through you.
Right, and so, well, I appreciate you acknowledging that. So, for to me, when I discovered this heritage, which, by the way, I also discovered that my father and my grandfather were both in World War II, and not that going to war and being a, you know, an agent of the, you know, military forces is something to be remembered by, but I happen to also be a veteran myself, and I think, I hope that it would mean something, and I'm learning more and more that it means not a darn thing, especially after war is a racket from, what's his name? So, anyway, but, so you kind of like burst my bubble that I, you know, when I found my heritage. See, I look around and the people, and our families are being destroyed.
The
ones that have the ones that have family don't even really, I don't know if they really, really appreciate their heritage. I don't have that. And I didn't have that. And when I discovered it, it was incredibly grounding for me.
Well, so yeah, let me explain something to you, okay? What's happening right now in the world is that everybody's being made into refugees. They started with the first world countries, and they turned everybody from people that are inhabiting the land, using the land, right, to national citizens. All right, so you have a very select group of people who go by their genealogy, their bloodline, their coat of arms. This is why you have the right to bear arms. That actually means your bloodline, your heraldry, not arms as in guns, which is, again, another subject. But the right to bear arms means to them, and the reason they put that in there is that they will always be able to bear or carry their family crest. That's what makes them private. That's what makes them be able to pass land. So the law itself, there's two forms of law. One that recognizes blood, and one that recognizes non-blood or attainder of blood, okay? So those who are recognized by their blood are the private citizens we're talking about. This is those fabled genealogies that we're talking about. Those who have had their blood corrupted by attainder. Now, you'll note that in the Constitution it says no bill of attainder shall ever be passed. That, again, protects them and their right to bear arms. But we volunteer to be United States citizens, and that's the hard part for people to accept. It's voluntary. This is a voluntary contract implied in agency that we accept this status from the United States. And what that does is it pulls us out. It makes us a refugee in our own land. Okay, our family's land has been stolen from us through this neo-feudal system that we call contractually United States citizenship. We're put into the United States. We're taken from our land, which is passed on by blood in immortality, which is what you're talking about, why you have those feelings, why some of us have that notion and some of us don't.
Okay.
So the reference there would be another reference would be the big Beatles song where he says, he's a real nowhere man living in his nowhere land, making all right, is that what you're saying?
That's great. Let me end it on that point, Mark. I've got other callers on the line here. I've got to let you go because I've given you 10 minutes, but thank you so much for the call, and I appreciate that. Thank with you. That, let's go to Francis in North Carolina. Francis, you're on with Michael and Clint. How are you?
Hello, fellas.
Hi.
Greetings.
Hey. The whole commentary that Clint has gone through is like a brainstorm, for that matter. So,
No kidding.
Hey, for someone as highly illogical as I am, it just made logical sense. It was ridiculous. But aside from that, one earlier caller that made the compliment that they did to the next callers in line, touche as far as the compliment goes. Now, my question to you, Clint, is, and all the things that you broke down in definition and how it applies to people here in the U.S. and so forth, ad nauseum, whatever terminology you wish to use and apply, or non-verbatim for that matter, how would that apply to people of indigenous Native American background and culture? I know I'm going to throw a major with that as a result of asking that question, but, you know.
No, there's... Like I said, everything starts with a moment in time, right? This is why the calendar is so important. The Roman calendar is so important to these people. Why we're on this timeline, the year of our Lord, right? And their year is 5778, which is called Anno Mundi, the year of the creation of the earth, right? So they're the Jewish calendar or the Anumundi calendar, they're on a different timeline. They started this timeline starting at zero back in 3770, whatever, right? So we're on two different timelines. This is very important to understand because we're basically history. We're dead. We're in a fictional timeline that they created. And that's very difficult to... I wrote a blog about it. It's on my blog currently, like the second one down. But you have to understand that there is no people. And this is why the Bible says don't respect these things, because a people can only exist once that people is declared. There are no Indians. There are no Native Americans, because America was announced at some point in time. It did not exist before that. Before that, it was simply a creation of God. Well, whatever your religious background is, doesn't matter. It's just nature itself. Right? So everything starts with an epoch, a moment in time that defines something. We say, I'm an American. Well, Americans didn't exist before 1770. I mean, there was no such thing. There was no such thing as an Englishman. There was no such thing as a caveman. There was, you know, at some point, these things were established in a false artificial time. Now, the Bible says, stay timeless, have no beginning and no end. And that's the difference. You see, a legal entity is a mortal entity. It has a beginning, a birth certificate, and it has an ending, a death certificate. The trick is, you don't have to physically die, just like you don't have to physically die to get a death certificate, is my point. The whole solution to this thing, in the end, is simply a death certificate, because what that means is that you're putting an end to contract. It's called the execution of the contract. Okay, what the reason Indians, the Native American Indians, have so many problems is because they agreed to become a nation. They were foolish enough, their leaders were paid off, whatever, to become a nation. A nation falls under the law of nations. You accepted this concept of legalism, and you stopped being a tribe, and you became a nation. And therefore, you fell under the international law, and the United States had all justification, just like they had justification in the Civil War, to destroy you. Civil War wasn't about slavery. It was about preserving the Union. The war against the Indians wasn't about anything but preserving the and adding on to the land holdings of the United States. Right? So...
Well, Clint, there was a little bit of foolishness on the part of indigenous Native Americans, because at that time they were being offered this, that, or whatever have you in exchange for their, saying, okay, if you become a citizen of this or whatever, then you get this,
right,
and so forth.
Right. So in other words, you give up your God-given natural rights of nature, and you accept political, artificial ones created by man, and therefore you're under contract.
They dangled a carrot in front of you. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Francis.
But now, that does not mean that all indigenous Native Americans went for that, because they actually saw what was being done. So at least a lot of them did not fall for that trap, which is very good for them, but...
There's two things that we're talking about, and they're actually not the same thing. We're talking about today, first of all, the notion of being truly a follower of the Bible, or the law of nature as it's written in the Bible, and for that matter in other sources. But you're not supposed to take any other sources according to the Bible. So since that's the law, that's what you go by, right? So you have that. Then there's this notion of private and public, okay? Public is what we are, private is what they are, okay? They are the landholders under a private law, which we would call the state law, their own system. They're not United States citizens, and basically they're the ones that Congress represents. Now, my whole thing here is the United States is essentially a contractual feudal system. Any nation is basically a feudal system that you contract into. And because of that, they have the right to take all the land. I'm saying that by giving up United States citizenship, you will revert to what you originally were born or naturally born into, which is to be a state. And at that point, you can inherit land. You can go back and take what's been stolen as the estate of your former family. And at that point, then you might be able to reestablish the republics and reestablish the United States and take away its power. But until you take the land back itself, the territory, and stop being a foreigner in there, nothing is ever going to change.
We're back with the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, with my special guest, Clint Richardson. We only got a few minutes left. I've still got Francis in North Carolina on the line. Francis, let's close this out here, and then going to close this show out with one particular subject. Go ahead.
Let me just say one just final sentence here. What I'm trying to tell you all is that you're not Americans. You're foreigners. America is the land. The nation is Washington, D.C., and that jurisdiction spreads all over the public lands that are claimed by that jurisdiction. You're not Americans. You're not acting as Americans. You're not in the republics because you're foreigners. If you want to, as the caller asked before, if you want remedy, you're not going to find it in the system that you're stuck in because it's a prison for your mind. If you want the true remedy is to take back the land. Stop being public citizens of the United States. Get rid of that disability and go back to being private citizens of the state, which means you're going back to the actual land. You're no longer a U.S. citizen. You're a private state citizen who has the right of blood, but being born here, to be a landholder. If you want to fix the nation, if you want to reestablish the republics, as they say, the very title of this radio station, you need to go back to the land and quit being like ghosts floating over it in commerce. That's my final message.
Any final thought, Francis?
Well, fellas, the only thing I wanted to say was a moment ago was that I'm out of here and later, and thanks so much. Take it easy.
She's out of here.
Oh, okay. I thought she had another thought.
The only way, for instance, we could help Native American people who probably would not be able to show their blood inheritance rights, et cetera, is to take back the land, right? Give it back to them. See, I want to start a monastery on my land. I want to start a place where people can go learn and become private landholders themselves. But to do that, you have to be self-governing. You have to know the Bible law, and you have to know state law, private law. You have to understand trust. You have to understand agency. You have to understand all these things so you don't get pulled back in to this system that is necessary to govern men who cannot govern themselves. And the only way you're going to govern yourselves is to become private or to become a sojourner under the law of nature, basically. Stick.
What happened to that? Was that me or was that you? you just cut out on my end, but anyway. Okay, well, listen, Clint, I want to thank you so much for coming on today, spending 2 hours of your valuable time in the middle of writing what evidently is your second book. And, yes, I look forward, not only myself, but also I'm sure my listening audience looks forward to having you up again. So with that being said, thank you again so much, and look forward to hearing from you, because I'm going to go back in here and see if I can make my way through this. Strawmanstory.info, that is his website, folks. Any closing thoughts? Go ahead, Clint. Anything else?
I all this stuff that I've talked about is primarily sourced. It's all in the book. Well, most of it's in book one. Some of it's in book two, which I haven't released yet. But it's all there. I set out to figure out how things worked. Didn't care about my ego. Didn't care if it hurt me or I just wanted to know the truth. And that's what I put in this book is the truth.
All right. Well, again, thanks so much for being on the air with me today. You'll be up again. Folks, that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed today's program. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, coming to you live from the Valley of the Sun. I'll see you same time, same station tomorrow with another show. Stick around. More to come.